Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 8th of July, recording at 9:52 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook. But first, just some highlights. The last 2 days here can only be described as a bravura performance by stock markets. Yesterday, we had, of course, the panicky sell-off early on following the London bombings. Markets were weak to begin with, and Wall Street had been down over 100 points on the Dow the day before. But as you know, most of those declines yesterday were recouped before the close, and we've had a barnstorming performance in here today in Europe. And then the U.S. came in, and after a little bit of hesitancy, just really roared ahead to closing up nearly 147 points or 1.43% on the Dow. Very solid gains, including 1.79% on the NASDAQ comp, up 37 points. Now, that's created some upward dynamics against a background of what was a soft-looking U.S. chart picture for the major indices. Now, I don't want to read too much into one day's price action. This could all be just a symptom of churning activity here. But what I can say, or the minimum I can say here, is that given a close like we've seen today on Wall Street, there really is, well, that has put it this way, has really opened the door to the possibility of a test of the year's highs. And perhaps a bit more. That's the main point I want to make. Now I'll come back to this. But bonds soft in here today, but that's hardly surprising given that they've had one heck of a run and that stock market is so strong, and that causes some people to think, well, maybe rates are going to go up a bit further, and I certainly agree with that view. The US dollar is still very steady in here overall. There's no evidence that this move is over. Okay, now let's get back to this big theme picture here, starting with stock markets. And I maintain, as you know, that this is a generation of mean reversion for the U.S. in terms of valuations. That doesn't mean that the U.S. is in some interminable downtrend, far from it, but it does mean that it's likely to underperform most other stock markets. And it does mean that, well, if you take Wall Street today, Wall Street is not competitive on a valuations basis globally. That doesn't mean, again, that it won't get some excellent rallies as we saw today. But the better value lies elsewhere, and everybody knows that. It has not been fully discounted because a lot of people, including myself, have been looking over their shoulder at Wall Street and are a little bit wary. But that mean reversion does mean that we will, over time, not in any linear fashion, but in a series of rolling waves, see PE ratios contract on Wall Street and see yields rise. Now that's no bad thing. That will eventually create a spectacular buy and hold opportunity, but I think that's probably a good many years down the road. In the interim, and it's a long interim, I think we're going to have medium term bullish moves and bearish moves, and liquidity will play a big factor in what the overall primary trend is. My hunch is that, as I've said before, is that we'll have a glass ceiling for the S&P index, and I think that's likely to be near the all-time highs, right up around the 1550 or so level. That's against, excuse me, can I sneeze? Apologies there for the sneeze. That's going to be, that's compared with 1211 on today's close. So glass ceiling, I think, for the S&P 500 right around the 1550 level. I'm looking for a cycle that is really quite similar to that secular bear market that we saw from really 1967 through 1982, when the Dow had a glass ceiling at 1025. It would rally up to that level, as you may recall, or you've heard me say, because you lived through it, you've heard me say it before, and then it would drop down, and sometimes it would bungee jump down. And then we got back to spectacular values with most of the Dow components trading at multiples of under 10, and the S&P dividend yielding 6.21 for the second quarter, in the second quarter of 1982. Now, you can find some very attractive valuations around the globe today, which is why I have such a strong preference for the Asian markets. That's also a factor in this investment environment, which is still awash with liquidity, although some of that, a little bit of that, have been siphoned off, but obviously not enough to drive these markets down. It's also why the European markets have been outperforming Wall Street recently. They've got better valuations. And then we get the commodity plays, and where there's good governance, those markets have done extremely well overall. So that's the overall background. I've referred, well, no, not quite. That's the overall background as far as Wall Street's concerned. I reckon, as you know, that Japan is in the early stages of a secular bull market. And that's because the bubble burst in Japan way back in 1990, and long secular bear market ending on the 28th of April 2003. We are now in the base extension phase. If Wall Street is steady, just ranging sideways, let alone rising, that increases the chances of a market like Japan moving up and completing its base formation. And for most people, that would be evident on a clear break above 12,000 by the Nikkei stock index, the 225, and that's currently at 11,565. The emerging markets in Asia, and also the other developed markets in Asia, so developed market like Singapore, exceptional values, under 10 PE ratio, yield of about the 3.6, I think, in the emerging Asian markets. Thailand's an exceptional market that's been out of favor recently because they export a lot to China, and also Thailand rather is a increasingly favored tourist haven for Chinese. And then interest rates have been going up for quite some time in Thailand to keep inflation under control. All those things are short to medium term factors, and we've seen this valuation improvement in Asia, which of course went through its secular bear market with the Asian crisis of 1997, and it got walloped again when the Nasdaq bubble burst. So we have much better valuations in Asia, and I do not expect secular bear markets there. But what investors in these markets will have to remember is that while hope springs eternal that we will get uncoupling from Wall Street, it's never happened, basically. Some markets have a higher correlation than others, but even where the correlation is low on a relative basis, it's still pretty high in absolute terms. So that's why I always refer to the Wall Street leash effect. Wall Street moving sideways, let alone higher, other markets that are in favor can do extremely well, and the markets that are likely to be in favor will be the value plays. That would include Europe, although among the value plays, the far better values are in Eastern Europe, emerging Europe, rather than developed Europe. And the value plays will certainly include the Asian markets that I've been mentioning. And my favorite of all of those, as you know, is India. It's not a bargain relative to the others right now, but it's got the best story of any stock market in the world over the long term, in my view, subject to governance remaining reasonable. And then there are also the resources plays, which I like a great deal. That ties in, of course, or links directly to my supply inelasticity theme. Now, again, we have to say subject to governance, because you get the political problems in Thailand, or not to mention Venezuela, some wobbles in Brazil, the heavy hand of Putin's regime in Russia, and of course those markets go right off the boil despite the resources plays, despite the attractive valuations that they have. So governance is everything, as I've said so often before, and even more so that applies with emerging markets. Now, and because emerging markets, developing countries, because they are developing, the extremes in terms of governance tend to be greater. In other words, going from the very good to the very bad. Whereas in the developed West, well, we're used to it. You know, we just get mediocrity and can generally muddle through with that. Mediocrity against a background of a democratic system, rule of law, and basically a stable society. So markets are happy with that, as long as liquidity is abundant and interest rates are not rising too sharply. Okay. Now, a little bit more on resources. There are an awful lot of reports coming out saying that oil is going to collapse. Andy Z of Morgan Stanley saying that. Others putting forward articles saying this is going to go down for quite some time. For the last year at least, I've seen major calls for big bearish moves in metals, and I think that's included heavyweight thinkers, people like Mark Farber. This is not knocking Coppi on my part in mentioning these names. I'm just saying there are a lot of people out there who have been saying sell the industrial commodities. And you turn on a financial television program, there are plenty of people who come forward and say they are all out of cyclicals. Well, and more often than not, they're referring to resources companies in and amongst those cyclicals. But look at what's happening. The oil shares continue to romp ahead. That won't always be the case, of course. That's the nature of markets. But it is still certainly the case today. Look at the way the metal shares also have rebounded for the most part. I'm talking now about companies like Xstrata in the UK, Billiton, and Rio Tinto. Rio Tinto is the one that I own. They're very, very firm in here. And we've had a lot of people saying that China will have a hard landing. And I respect all these views, but I think about it, and you know, we get every kind of view stated in the markets, and we have to come to some conclusions. I look at the Chinese stock market and I get alarmed. Shanghai Index drifting back down to the 1,000 level where the government supported last time, and I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't try to support it again this time. But I don't want to digress from those China hard landing stories. If that's the case, then these metals, which are volatile anyway, could have a big down swoop. And historically, the sectors, the resources sectors, have been very, very cyclical. And so the people who have been putting out these bearish forecasts have a lot of history on their side. But as I've argued and written, I would say that the world is not exactly replete with examples of countries the size of China and growing as rapidly as China, going for the sort of urbanization programs. And it isn't exactly, the world isn't exactly replete with cases of countries the size of India, which are embarking on infrastructure development plans, which are likely to run for many, many, many years. And of course, those are just the two biggest countries in Asia. We're talking about 3.6 billion people, who are seeing their standards of living for the most part rise really quite rapidly. So I don't want to be too bearish for metals. That is that Asian growth, that huge population, and a lot of it, of course, has to do with democratization. Did I say democratization? Well, some of it has to do with democratization. I really meant globalization, but forgive me, it is a few minutes after 10 o'clock here tonight. So it is mainly to do with globalization. But the bottom line here is that the world has not been in a position when we've seen such large countries, certainly in terms of populations, that are absolutely enormous. Again, 3.6 billion people who are experiencing this increase in their living standards, starting from the bottom, starting really from ground level, and working upwards very rapidly. And of course, they go from the bicycle economies and the ox cart economies to the scooters and the motorcycles and then the automobiles, and from the ox carts to the tractors and other mechanized farm equipment. And they all want the refrigerators and the air conditioning machines and all the gizmos and so on that that we all have. And so, are metal prices really going to go down all that sharply against that background? Well, they could. Gizmos, I meant to say a while ago. That was the intentional error. I'm sure you picked it up. Again, it is 10 after 10 here. But press on, David. So, my feeling really is that people have been too bearish of the resources. I think they're probably too bearish of China. China experienced a hardish landing in 1994, I believe. It experienced a genuine hard landing, I believe, in 1989. That was around the Tiananmen Square massacre period. So they've learned from that experience, and there really isn't any clear reason why that should repeat itself. We don't have consumer price inflation running riot in China, which would cause problems. Yes, we had a lot of speculation and overbuilding and so on, and but I think that the problem for China is really right now is profits and margin compression. So they don't want to be squeezing the economy too much, let alone revaluing the renminbi. So I think China will muddle through, and a China muddle through means growth of at least 6 or 7%, and that's still pretty red hot by global standards. And of course, it could be considerably higher than that. And I think India's growth will continue to remain not only strong but probably increase. The U.S. economy, I've always been in the muddle through camp there. So I think that means that demand for these resources, led by energy, is going to be enormous. I don't really see that changing. So again, in my core positions, I do really want them to be in energy still, and also in these Asian emerging markets, and also Japan for a real sleeper that will have a great recovery here one day. Now, would I pay up for these markets? No. Is this an optimum time to go into these markets? No, I don't think so, because there are powerful cyclical and seasonal factors to suggest that, and the U.S. interest rate cycle to suggest that this is not a great time for equities. And I think we're going to be in this sort of danger period for a while longer. And because we haven't seen an accident, that doesn't mean that the danger isn't there. And because we get a great upward dynamic on Wall Street here today, again, doesn't mean that the dangers won't reappear or be felt by markets, experienced by markets in the weeks and months ahead. So I do think this is the time to be really quite careful. I've said that for quite some time, but I'm holding my resources positions and my Asian positions, which are really must be at least 95% of my portfolio overall, if not not more. What I am going to do is, having looked a gift horse in the mouth yesterday, I'm going to chop out my remaining stock market futures hedge short positions, and I just don't want to be holding those when we get another new high occurring in European indices. So those would be positions in the DAX index and the Swiss SMI. I'm not increasing positions overall, partly also because I'm going on holiday, as you know, so I'm actually decreasing positions. That's influencing me as well. Now, moving on to government bonds. I've set an accident waiting to happen. These U.S. Treasuries closed down 24/30 seconds in here today, 116.27. Again, not so surprising that they would move down when Wall Street was moving up, because it liked the employment figures. Statistic du jour, I think it's just mostly liquidity, but I think these bond yields are an accident waiting to happen. I remain short. In here, I do feel that we have a secular bear market ahead of us, but I said all along that the topping out process would be very, very lengthy. And when I say very, very lengthy, we really don't want to be thinking just in terms of months, or thinking in terms of years. And I said that bond market peaked in June 2003. Okay, we saw a few not too big bungee jumps on the downside, and we've seen a rally back close to those levels of June 2003. I really don't think there's much upside here for bond prices or downside for those government bond yields. I think people are exceptionally complacent about that. They're rationalizing. They're saying there's no inflation in the system. they are too bearish, as I've mentioned, on China and some of the other economies and on the global economy. And I think they're going to be disappointed. And Alan Greenspan agrees with me, as you know, from all of his various different warnings. I still regard Greenspan as smart money. In the currency markets, it's one story here this year, and that is the dollar's rally, and it's not over. I'm in the uncomfortable position of having a couple of, fortunately not too large, but nevertheless painful, long positions in the Aussie dollar and the New Zealand dollar. Those are things I played successfully earlier in the year and last year, but was a bit cavalier in moving in again last month, and they look a little bit oversold to me in the short term, so I'm inclined to wait for a bounce. But Owen and I were talking about the various different currencies and saying, well, what about a new position in here if we were going to come in and pick up a dollar position, and agreed that it would probably be against the South African rand. Now, there is the interest rate differential. That's the one negative on that, but the chart pattern looks good. You can check it out in the chart library, subscribers chart library. So I might even do that before I go away, although I'm far more keen to, now I'm talking about my August cycling holiday, far more keen to chop positions, but I think I should at least consider picking up some buying the dollar against the South African rand. In the commodity markets, all that talk of the China slowdown plus the rollovers that we saw on so many of those industrial metals have made me a little gun shy in here right now. Copper, those rallying right back up to test its high. You know my views on this. I think people are too bearish of the sector overall, but it is extremely, extremely volatile, and it would be hardly surprising if we didn't have a lengthy consolidation phase, but long-term secular bull market, I've said it and repeated it. In terms of agricultural commodities, and this is an incredibly volatile sector, the most volatile sector of all. But when you see the bungee jumps, and I'm not just talking about a 24-hour action, but you get those, particularly it's the slow motion bungee jumps where you just get a persistent downward trend that falls back to support. These things are historically cheap. We've got all the interesting stories about water. And largely from the scarcity standpoint or pollution standpoint, we've got the global GDP growth. We have the turbulent weather. Yet these agricultural commodities are still really quite cheap. One of the reasons for that, of course, is because the chemists, the biochemists, have been so successful in recent generations in improving the yields, particularly in terms of the grain and bean crops, and making them much, much hardier and so on, a disease resistant, much stronger, shorter crops in terms of resisting, talking about grains now, being knocked over by strong winds and so on. So that really, really did help in terms of crop yields, and then the fertilizers and so on, the intensive farming methods. That really led to an incredibly long period of basically declining prices in this agricultural sector. Now, their resources and they're dirt cheap, and my guess is that we've gotten about as much mileage. There'll always be improvements and enhancements in any field, but my guess is that for the foreseeable future, we've probably gotten most of the mileage out of the crop enhancements. We may well get some unpleasant surprises in terms of weather conditions in particular. And therefore, when these agricultural commodities get hit, they, and I'm talking about sort of a medium-term correction or very sharp correction, then I think that one can step in and pick them up, and that's quite a reasonable speculation. Indeed, I would say of the whole commodity sector, including the industrial commodities, metals through the energy commodities, that when we see those periodic shakeouts, and those will occur not necessarily for economic factors. The economic factors may be a trigger, but just because we get the stampeding hedge funds and other speculators piling in and piling out. And when that occurs, when they get hit, I think one can step in modestly, pick up some long positions, and do quite well. That's been a tactic that I've been able to use, fortunately, with some success over the last few years, and I expect to use it over the next many years probably as well. Last but not least, the precious metals under a bit of a cloud at the moment, or should I say facing that strong headwind from the dollar. The dollar is going up more than the metals are going down because other people in other countries that are not living under dollar-based currencies recognize the value in these precious metals as well, which are gradually being remonetized in the eyes of investors. That's a secular trend. It will continue for a very long time. And that's a wrap, folks. Have an absolutely fabulous weekend. I'm going to a couple of operas, among other things. Can't wait. All the best.